gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Now, I know this isn't your story, but it's been kind of making the rounds lately. What do you make of the alleged UN meeting about disclosure that's kind of been talked about lately in the last few weeks or so?
It's an interesting story. There have been many such stories that have been popping out. I view what's going on right now as kind of a bubbling cauldron, mm-hmm. where suddenly a bubble will emerge and pop, and another one over here will emerge and pop. It's happening so fast, it's really difficult to vet all this stuff. And ultimately, it doesn't really matter. However, we need to know about these things, and I'm looking into it, and I hope to know more soon. If there's something there, and I can work with it, I will. But we have to pay attention to all this stuff, but we don't want to jump too quickly because there's still the potential for disinformation. Mm-hmm. Some of it has its own momentum. The government might still throw a little out there to leaven the process. You have pranksters and others who like to play with this game. The truth embargo has kind of become a field to play in. So we have to be careful, but we shouldn't dismiss anything outright. And we should be prepared for things to turn up at any time. So I am going to look further into that. If there was a UN meeting, I'd like to know about it. It's certainly important that we get the UN involved. I think it's illogical. All right, the UN is having a bad time. It's viewed increasingly as being irrelevant. It's had scandals. I think if the UN were to embrace this issue and exert its appropriate hegemony, I think that would go a long way towards restoring UN credibility. But that's the UN's decision, and I haven't had the time to really engage the UN, though that is on the list of things to do.
Yeah. And now you've talked about sort of the change here in the attitude of the mainstream media, and I know you've done a lot of mainstream media appearances for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm.
Have you sensed a difference, I guess you could say, in the attitude of the people who bring you on TV to talk about this issue?
Yeah, it's better. It's always been, for me, relatively good, but I don't really put up with any nonsense. I think if you don't act like you'll put up with any nonsense, people tend not to give you any. But overall, it's getting better. My appearances have been fine. Larry King, in particular, who's always been, I think, on our side and has tried to do his part, is suddenly really getting active. He's done 4 shows in the last 8 months. That's quite unusual, and I think I expect him to do more. So, thanks to Larry. Wonderful. I hope, I'd love to do a show someday. I'm getting on CNN and Fox. Nightline did a significant show connected to Out of the Blue, the documentary by James Fox and Tim Coleman and others. Not only the media coverage is increasing in print, but it's also we're getting more and more segments on talk shows, news shows. And of course, there's a lot of shows, and they need content. And, gee, this is only the most interesting story in the world, so it's hardly surprising. But, in fact, we should be on 100 times more than we are.
Yeah.
This is a massive story. And there's a whole list of people that should be on and aren't. They haven't gotten around to them yet. But the cracks are forming all along the front of the dam. And the media is the water that flows through those cracks. And it's getting better. And people should anticipate to see more documentaries, more news segments, more front page articles, unless the government were to somehow intervene and try to really repress this. But I don't recommend the government do that, because given the power of the internet, if it does, we'll know within 24 hours and we'll be all over. So I don't expect the government to do that. So I think we're going to see expanded media presence and more TV time for this issue, less debunkers, right? Less stand in debunkers saying silly things.
Yeah.
And that once the media has signaled to the political class that it's no longer in the tank on this issue, then they will realize they've got to come forward, and they will feel safer about it too. And once the politicians start coming forward, in other words, more Dennis Kucinich's, more, oh yeah, I had a sighting, oh, And before you know it, you're going to have some congressmen coming out. Well, you know, I've been an abductee since I was six. Well, you go there, clearly the embargo is probably in its last few minutes, wouldn't we agree?
Yeah, definitely. It's always sort of been the idea of people who study the UFO phenomenon that whoever's running the truth embargo, as you like to call it, has their thumb down on the media. Now, would you say that the resurgence in media interest, do you think that's a result of more of an independent media, or just that whoever's got the grip on the secrets sort of loosening up and being like, all right, it's okay to talk about it more?
Extremely complex subject. There's two dynamics going on here. One, look, at the same time that media has become bigger than ever, multi-layered, multi-tiered, multifaceted, which is good. And partially because of that, because we're talking about enormous amounts of investments and money and everything else, the media is also becoming more tightly controlled by lesser entities. So we got more controlled by less groups. And that's a problem. And I think it needs to be balanced out. We need to pass certain laws. We need the appropriate agencies to exert a little more influence here and mitigate this concentration of power. It's definitely risky. And I think the concentration of media ownership is cost America. It's hurt it in a number of ways. So that's one thing. And it needs to be watched, and it needs to be carefully monitored. On the other thing, the other area is, regardless of who owns the media, what is their, how they interacted with the ET UFO phenomenon issue, going back 60 years. And that is a very complex issue as well. In fact, that'll be covered in the upcoming X conference, which is the fourth one. That's going to be April 18, 19, 20, Gaithersburg, Maryland, outside of Washington, D.C. All the registration, all that kind of stuff is at x-conference.com, x-conference.com. We have an extraordinary event. But we're going to be getting into that media issue again. Terry Hansen will be there, Rob Simone. I'll be talking about it. The media, not surprisingly, elected to go along with the truth embargo as it was developed in the 1950s. It wasn't a hard call. They were told in various ways. It was sort of just let known that this issue is off limits. Don't go there. It's a problem. Don't deal with it in any serious way, or at least exercise some constraint, because we got a Cold War underway here. We're going to be facing off with the Soviet Union. There's enough nukes to blow everybody to kingdom come. And so the media went along with that. National security reasons. And it went along with it for many, many years until it became pretty much standard operating procedure.
Yeah.
Now, everyone, you know, so it wasn't necessary to put the thumb on them, but I think probably every once in a while a phone call was made or two, maybe a publisher network saying, you know, we're getting a little bit close to home here. So they didn't have to do a lot. The media was pretty much in the tank going back to the 50s, and I'm not going to argue that. Of course, when the embargo started to become less appropriate and we moved away from the Cold War and everything, the media was slow to adjust. It sort of went along with the status quo. And, in fact, it had developed bad habits, which turned up in other ways, covering other issues.
Yeah.
In other words, its fundamental adversarial role had degraded, complicated also by the corporate ownership and the concentration of power. So we had an imbalanced situation that was dysfunctional. And there's plenty being written about that, and I assume corrective measures are underway. So, just because we still have high concentration of corporate ownership doesn't mean that the media couldn't take on this issue big time, because it is. It is the biggest news story of all time, after all. And the embargo is breaking down, and other nations are getting involved. And so, frankly, if I'm a major player, a major owner in media today, and the government kind of comes to me and says, you know, kind of wish you kind of stay off that UFO issue, I'd say, you know, guy, that ship sailed a long time ago. So overall, barring, again, something draconian happening, I think the media is ready to finally go for it. And once they go for it, anybody who has seen a media frenzy knows that there's nothing stopping it. It's like a plague of locusts. Yeah. It's over, right? Just give in. Tell them what they got. Give them the photograph, and hope you can make it home safely.
One of the big stories, I guess, from last year that I did want to ask you about was the Governor Symington Phoenix Light story that came out and was big news, and he's kind of become a fixture on the circuit now. What was your take on the Symington thing, and how does it relate to the whole exopolitical scene?
Perfectly emblematic of what's going on, and very important, right? It's like a microcosm of what's happening. In 1997, you have a man who is well-respected, politician from a political family, known political family in America. He's governor of an important state, Arizona. And he's starting to have some problems, right? not dissimilar to what many other politicians have had. Some business dealings were a little off, and his opponents are coming after him, and he's under pressure. Phoenix Likes events occurs, and he makes fun of it. Makes a decision, makes fun of the thing, causes a bit of a ruckus, and sort of looks bad and does not act constructively. As it happens, his problems got worse, and he was eventually indicted, forced to leave office, and he was convicted of some real estate stuff. But he was pardoned by Bill Clinton, and he went on to lead a pretty exemplary life. You know, wonderful wife, family, kids, started up a new business, became an important fixture in Santa Barbara. So, I mean, he's not a bad guy and a sharp guy. So he intersected the issue in 1997, and he went on to lead a life and put it all behind him. And then, lo and behold, 10 years later, when James Fox turns up to interview him about the Phoenix Lights event as part of trying to upgrade or put out a new edition of his extremely important and powerful documentary, Out of the Blue, it's still, in my opinion, the best documentary ever made about the UFO-ET issue, with a lot of exopolitical content, Fife Simonton made the decision to go public with the rest of the story, right? And the rest of the story is that he actually saw the initial craft of Iglin that flew over. This is the earlier in that evening. And it was startling and profound to him. And he just, what can he say? I mean, what is he going to do? He was stunned, moved, but he was the governor, and there was a foo-fog going on, and he made the decision to hold a press conference and bring in an alien guy, a guy in an alien suit, whatever. But that was a political decision and a mistake. He sat on that information about what he actually saw that night, but he gave it to James Fox. Why? 10 years later, this is a man who had been disgraced, forced to resign as governor, who was convicted, but thanks to a pardon, was able to return to his life, lead a pretty good life, and yet 10 years later, he's willing to come forward with that truth about what he saw that night, even though it potentially posed a considerable amount of risk to him and wasn't going to help him in, how would you say, reconnecting with the public, or it certainly was risky in doing that. Why? Because Mr. Symington is not a stupid man. He is still a well-connected man, and I have a pretty good idea that he knew that that things were changing, and that this issue was moving quickly, possibly toward resolution. And he felt confident enough of that that he was able to re-enter the issue, and in fact, has been involved in several things. And he's been on Larry King. He was the moderator of the CFI James Fox press conference on November the 12th, and so he's emerging as kind of a spokesperson and a political figure. Engaging the issue, like Paul Hellyer, for instance, and others that are getting involved. So this shows you that things are different now. This is not 1967. This isn't 77, and this isn't 97. This is 2008, and this issue is about to pop. So it's very important what he did. I am very proud that he did that. I hope to meet him someday. Love to have him come to the next conference someday. And I have great respect for him. It's easy, right? It's easy to just go away and not have to address issues. It's very hard to say I was wrong. It's even harder to come out and say, look, there's something I didn't tell you, even though it might be a little risky. And you know, this is a sign of courage and wisdom, and he certainly demonstrated that.
You're obviously a major player here in the exopolitics field, and I'm sure it's water off a duck's back to you, but what's your response, I guess you could say, to the haters? The people who sort of are antagonistic to the whole thing, and they're not just in ufology, but, you know, they're throughout the gamut of esoterica, you know, they seem a little jaded. You know, I could run down a number of their critiques and everything. You're only as good as your weakest link, and, you know, they pick apart certain people in the exopolitical movement, say, well, if you're going to have these guys in there, then you're hurting the whole thing, and it's a joke and all that stuff. What's your response, I guess you could say, to the haters out there?
Well, first of all, I think hate's too strong.
Yeah, well, it's an expression.
It is too strong. We all know what we mean by hate. There is plenty of dissatisfaction among some people with the exopolitical developments and the what I would call this exopolitical movement. And my response is, it's exactly what's happened 1,000 times before. Whenever there's been an activist movement involving a very significant political issue, there's plenty of dissension, there's plenty of disagreement, and it's often along certain lines, particularly the old versus the new. In this case, it's pretty well defined you've got the remember the area of ufology we talked about, and all the people that were involved in that and still are pursuing the citizen science, and they sort of became used to a certain approach to this, and develop and continue to work on acquiring more knowledge and try to be, even without the money and without the support of colleges and universities and government grants and foundations and everything, but try to do the best science you can, and if you succeed, you'll prove the case and we'll acknowledge and we'll go forward. That was the modus operandi. Now we have a new approach, a new era of exopolitics with new people, fresh, coming out of nowhere in some respects, and they're trying to carry the ball over the goal line. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to complete the science. Of course not. The science will be completed by, the mainstream scientists and universities and colleges and in government laboratories. Of course, there's already a lot of science that's been done in secret. Hopefully, we'll know about that. So the science will continue. But there is a tension between the old guard and the new exopolitical people, and it's hardly surprising. It's normal. It's to be expected. I would prefer there wasn't, but hey, this is a utopia. I'm sure that better effort could be made on both groups to be more understanding, can communicate better with each other, be less suspicious. But politics is not science, even though they refer to it as political science. It's a much messier realm to deal in. And you're dealing with different issues. And the scientific method is frequently not involved in those issues, in what you have to do. So these tensions are going to remain, and there's going to be criticisms. I consider that part and parcel with the activist movement. I'm going to do my best to try to minimize it, but there's only so much you can do. And I do listen to the complaints, and I've heard them, and I'm not unaware of them. And to the extent I can respond and adjust, I will respond and adjust. But let's be clear. Most of the people that I work with have nothing but high regard and respect for the researchers that have developed this field for the last 60 years, living and dead. And there would be no exopolitical movement without them. And as we go forward, there's going to be no efforts really on my part to diminish their contribution or to undermine them. But we still have to, we have a goal. We have to get this embargo ended. We need a disclosure event. And so I'm going to pursue that goal. And that will take first priority. And hopefully in time, the old guard, the researchers, particularly, will develop a little more of appreciation for what we're trying to do, which is not to say there aren't people making mistakes, or even some people, maybe in the exopolitical movement, saying some things which are pretty far out there. But as we know, if you look at the whole scientific history of ufology, there's plenty of out there things being said from time to time. Sometimes those things actually prove to be real. For instance, in the very early days, you had people starting to talk about abductions, and they were told they were crazy. What are you talking about? It's weird enough, we got saucers flying around here. Now you're saying that aliens are taking you up into ships? Give me a break. Well, guess what? Now we know they are doing that. So what can I say? It's part of the human condition. No major political movement in history has ever gone smoothly. Pick one. I can tell you about it. So we're no different. And I would say overall, we're doing about as well as the rest of them. So I'm neither angry nor pessimistic about our ability to move forward. And ultimately, everybody, I think, hopefully can agree on one thing, and that is that if disclosure takes place and the government finally relents and acknowledges that there is an ET presence, everybody in this field will benefit.
Well, actually, that raises an interesting point, because a lot of people, the critics, I guess you could say, and I only use the expression haters, because, it's a slang term nowadays, so
yeah.
I didn't mean in the literal sense that they hate anyone. You raise a point here, because a lot of people seem to think that if disclosure happened, the people in ufology and their accomplishments and their work and everything would be severely diminished, not by the exopolitical people, but just by the mainstream media.
Sure.
Yeah. The UFO issue would be taken out of their hands and put into the mainstream science, and they would kind of be like, okay, you were right, now go away. So, I mean, and maybe it's an innate unspoken fear, if you will, of a tarnished legacy or something. I don't know.
But everybody is It's a legitimate concern. In fact, when I entered the field in 96, I really had that concern, and I in the first few years, it was on my mind a great deal. I don't have it as much now, and the reason for that is pretty straightforward. It's the internet. The real rise of the internet almost marries my time in this from 1996-2008. And because of the web presence that the UFO and exopolitical community is generating, the archiving of videos, lectures, presentations, there is an indelible and unerasable history of interaction of these people with this issue that cannot be erased by the government in a post-disclosure world. This is not 1948 Soviet Union when they were going through all the darn photographs and airbrushing out everybody that was out of favor or executed. This is a new world.
Yeah.
And so I think we got a pretty good – I think it's very likely that everyone that contributed will be acknowledged in one form or another. Nobody ever gets acknowledged as much as they want. I understand that, but they're not going to be left behind. They're certainly not going to be – there's no way that the exopolitical guys, as we're sometimes referred to, are somehow going to have the ability to make the ufologists and the scientists and the oligarch go away. Not being acknowledged is not going to happen, and we would, I certainly wouldn't do that, and I don't know any of my colleagues that would do that. So it's not, but there is a legitimate concern that the mainstream, particularly those who have been sitting on the sidelines, somebody rushing forward and saying, oh, I know all about this, and those guys are idiots, and I'm a professor at Harvard, and I know all about this, so you'd listen to me. Yeah, there'll be some of that. But the internet record is there. And so they are going to be acknowledged. I think their biggest concern should be whether they live long enough. Okay? In other words, some of these soldiers are pretty old. And, so my advice is stay healthy, give up smoking, drink less, eat better food, take your vitamins, and hang in there so that you're going to be here when disclosure takes place. Clearly, if it happens next year, we're in good shape. So, if we all at least keep that goal in mind and act to the extent possible in the interest of moving this disclosure process forward, then disclosure will come sooner than later. And then once it comes, well, then I guess we'll address the proper acknowledgement of the people that contributed to this whole process. And I am far more optimistic now than I was in 1997 that there will be a proper acknowledgement, and I feel that way, and hopefully nothing will change my mind on that.
Yeah. Just to get a little on-the-ground perspective, I know you're down there in Laughlin. What's the mood like out in Laughlin? How's the scene out there? And you've been out there before, I presume, so maybe you compare it a little bit to the past years. Is the mood up? Is the mood down? Optimistic, all that good stuff. What's it like out there?
The conference is going smoothly. Bob and his daughters, Nicole and so forth, are doing a fine job. Nice turnout. More speakers than before. They've been doing it for a long, long time. And I think what's probably notable is that it's kind of routine, and it's kind of what you would expect. Most of the people here, they're very familiar with this issue, so they're not easily surprised. It's comfortable. There's a lot of collegiality. We come here to meet, talk, engage.
Yeah.
This is one of a number of conferences where that happened. So all good. Probably the most important event of this will be the interview of the Rob, moderated by Rob Simone on Saturday of Dan Burrish, where he's going to spend a couple of hours answering a lot of questions, and I'm extremely interested in knowing what Dr. Burrish has to say. And that's good. So we're excited about that, and we're all having a good time. And I'm very appreciative of the Brown family that they have been keeping this conference going now for all this time. It's been an important part of the citizen science movement.
And what about youth turnout? I've been a big pusher here for young people in the esoteric fields and all that good stuff, and it seems like it may be kind of starting to turn around. More young people, I'm hoping, will start to get into the UFO scene and all the other extemporaneous areas. How's the young people turn out there, it seems like, this year?
I'll be candid with you. The young people are still not – the Generation Double Xers particularly, and even Generation X, are still very slowly getting involved. It's a trickle. And I think I've come to accept the fact that they're not going to get involved until post-disclosure. It's a complex discussion. Let me just say that embargo was created by the last generation. Not the baby boomers, but the one before that. The generation that is now often referred to as the greatest generation because of Brokaw's book. Mm-hmm. They created it, and they maintained it. The ending of the truth embargo, I think, falls to the baby boomer generation, my generation. I'm almost all of my colleagues are roughly about my age, born not too long after World War II. And it's our job pretty much to try to bring this under control and the truth embargo, and probably to a larger measure reform the national security state, or certainly what I call the secret empire. The Generation X and Generation Xers are far more comfortable with the idea of being in space, are far more comfortable with the idea of extraterrestrials. It's not that big a deal to them. And of course they're young and they've got a life to lead and they're involved in that. And this is not a life or death kind of thing. It's not an obvious thing. I mean, if you're a black person trying to get civil rights or a woman trying to get to vote, or if you're an Indian trying to get the British out, it's pretty clear what the problem is. The ET issue is far more subtle, far more complex. And so it's just not something that's going to take millions and millions of young kids and put them in the streets. It's not going to happen. But they're well aware of what's going on. They're paying attention, by and large, and they're cool with the issue. So the baby boomer generation, we will end the truth embargo. And once that announcement is made, I am fairly confident that the young people will be on board real fast. And that will be, I guess, our gift to them. Since we pretty much bankrupted the country, wiped out the ozone, and we're melting the ice caps, I guess the least we can do is give them the truth on the ET presence.
Well, as part of that generation, I appreciate it. All right, well, let's talk about the X Conference 2008. It's coming up April 18th to the 20th, Gaithersburg, Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C. X-conference.com, is that the URL?
That's right. It's our fourth one. It's called Insiders 2. And it's really strong. We have an extraordinary banquet scheduled for Saturday night in which the lead keynote, main keynote, will be given by astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell, founder of IONS, the author of the Way of the Explorer, and, of course, one of the few men that walked on the moon, Apollo 14. A brilliant man, a great man. He's giving the main keynote. It'll be a short keynote by Paul Hellyer, the former Minister of Defense of Canada, and then a short keynote by George Norrie. I think you may be familiar with George.
Oh, I know George. Oh, yeah.
Last I remember, he was the host of a leading late-night talk show in America. And then we have Dr. Bruce McAbee and Dr. C.B. Scott-Jones will be part of an aviary panel along with Dr. John Alexander. We've got Dr. Tom Vallone talking about alternative to energy. We have got, we've got Dr. Brian O'Leary, another astronaut, coming in to talk. We've got Grant Cameron, who'll have a special presentation regarding the developments with the presidents and UFOs, which is extremely timely, new information there. Mike Berg, Victor Vigiani are coming down. Colin Andrews will be presenting. We're going to premiere the new edition of the Phoenix Lights documentary, along with two documentaries about John Mack, a tribute to John Mack. This is a part of what people can find at x-conference.com. It's an important event, and it's not just an event to hold an event. It's part of the advocacy process. It's in Washington. All the members of Congress are invited. All the presidential candidates are invited. Political press are invited. It's a showing of the flag. Get 500-600 people in that hotel and let it be known that we're not going away. We expect to have the truth, and we expect our politicians to get involved. That's why I created it. That's why we hold it. And we hope as many as possible will come join us in Gaithersburg in April.
And as someone who's been to two of them, I can absolutely say that it's a must-attend. It's the best East Coast conference there is. So if you're in Boston, New York, Philadelphia, all these, you know, that whole corridor, there's no excuse not to attend it. It'll be cheaper than having to fly all the way out across the country to someplace. And as someone who's on limited budget myself, I was head over heels when I first attended it. And I'm hoping this year that I can make the trip down to Washington, so I'll keep you abreast of that situation.
And let me mention, Tim, I almost forgot, that George isn't just giving a brief keynote. He's also giving a special two-hour presentation, a rare visit to the East Coast. It's a fundraising event for PRG, and he's going to autograph books, he's going to get Q&A, and he's going to talk about his career. This is just a great opportunity for the fans of George on the East Coast, so that's going to be on Saturday as well at the X Conference.
Totally. George Norrie rarely makes a trip out to the East Coast, so this is a great chance for all the great Coast to Coast listeners to get a chance to meet him. And like I said, all these major cities here on the corridor, there's no excuse not to miss this conference. It's outstanding. And if you've never been to one, definitely want to check this one out, because I had a great time when I attended both years. Like I said, Steve, in a world of talkers, you're a doer, and I appreciate that so much. And I really appreciate you giving us so much time here to take some time out of your trip out there to Laughlin. I really appreciate that. I know how busy it is at these conferences. You know, like you said, it's a lot of networking involved. The presentations are just part of the story out there. It's always, you know, the meeting and the greeting and everything. So to take some time here to talk to us and come back on the show, I really appreciate it. I look forward to future developments. We're going to obviously keep in touch, and we're going to keep following this story till the embargo breaks down.
Yeah, Tim, I appreciate your time as well, and glad to have you on board with us. And you're making history, my friend, and so let's just keep focused, keep our eye on the prize.
Absolutely.
That does it for this week's edition of BOA Audio Season 3. I can't thank Steve Bassett enough for coming on the show, taking some time out of his trip to Laughlin to actually do the interview. Huge, huge thanks to Steve for that. You can find out more information on Steve Bassett at the websites www.paradigmresearchgroup.org, P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M, researchgroup.org. And check out information on the X Conference at www.x-conference.com. Definitely want to make the trip down to the Beltway to attend the X Conference if you have a chance. Moving right along now, let's dive into the BOA Audio Listener Feedback Mailbag. And here's what we have. I'm going to be a little selfish with this one, folks, but selfish to help out some other people. You'll understand after I read the letter. It comes from someone by the name of Lawn. No hometown listed, just Lawn. And the title is Reciprocal Link. I was wondering if you could consider a reciprocal link to our blog, Phantoms and Monsters. I enjoy your site and placed a link to it a while back. Thanks for the considerations, Lawn. There you go, short and sweet and very cool from Lawn to send me that email. And of course I'll put up a reciprocal link. And the selfish part is I want to talk about the new section of BOA that we added in January or so. At the bottom of the homepage, scroll down the black column in the middle of the page. It says, Friends of BOA. Has a great list of all the great websites that have been helping us out. And, of course, we included here this new website, Phantoms and Monsters. You can find that at phantomsandmonsters.com. But in the list of friends of BOA, you can find, of course, many of our great friends online, like anomalous.com, dailygrail.com, alienworlds, wintersteel, paranormal.about.com, Remote Central, the list goes on and on. It's quite a list. Go there, you can check that section out at the homepage, and then jump to these sites and check them out and investigate them and really dig into some of their work. Folks who have been huge supporters of BOA for quite some time, and I want to give them their due and hopefully return the favor and help spread the word about their great sites. Thank you, Lon, for the email. And like I said, I already put your link up there, so you're all hooked up with the link, buddy. Of course, folks, send me your links if you want to do something like that. I'm always down for working together with people throughout the world of esoterica. We need more cohesion, less competitive craziness, and I think we'll be advancing the agenda further and faster with that mindset. But hey, that's just me. Some folks have different opinions on that sort of thing. If you'd like to be a part of BOA Audio listener feedback, here's how you do it. There's two ways. Either write to boaaudio@hotmail.com or go to banalofamerica.com. Click the contact button. You'll find a creepy picture and the contact information to get in touch with me and become a part of BOA Audio listener feedback. Up next, what else? You know it. It's the thanks portion of the show. Leslie, Chiron, R. Lee, Joe V., Tina Senna, and Rochelle Hawks, the outstanding BOA staff. I couldn't do this show without them. I couldn't run BOA without them. They really carry the load Monday through Friday at Banal of America with enlightening columns that anyone who considers themselves a student of esoterica should be reading. We've been saying it quite a while here at the end of the program. If you're only listening to BOA Audio and you're not checking out the columns at banalofamerica.com, you're only getting half the story. Punch in BOA, check it out 7 days a week, something new, something fresh, something maybe a little off kilter to satisfy your quest for esoteric news and opinion. For me, BOA started as a hobby. It's grown into a massive franchise that at times just about frightens me. And, of course, that kind of thing costs me money. It's not cheap to run the Banal of America Starship. The phone calls, the bandwidth, the hosting, that stuff costs money. how do we keep it free for all of our great listeners and readers? We do it with donations from the outstanding supporters of BOA. I got to thank all the great folks who have been donating so far in 2008. There's other folks out there, though, that are on the fence. They've been thinking about donating, you know, that kind of thing. Oh, well, I'll do it later. Now's the time to do it, my friends. Donate to Banal of America if you can, and help us keep the website and the audio freely available to all of our great listeners the world over. I don't even need to mention the BOA store. You know about it by now if you visit the website. Let your freak flag fly. Tell them UFOs are real. Get over it. Or that you believe in Bigfoot. Maybe advance the theory that Stonehenge was an inside job. All those great slogans on t-shirts, aprons, frisbees, mouse pads, anything you could really want to put that thing on, it's on there. So check out the BOA store at Banal of America. And those purchases there, of course, throw a little money into the till that helps keep BOA on the straight and narrow. Next week on the program, I'm going to give you just a little half tease here, because much like how we had this show here with Steve Bassett, next week's guest is going to be taped this coming week to roll out next weekend. Since it's been scheduled for a while, I might as well reveal the name and the topic we'll be discussing. The guest will be Dr. Bob Curran. We're going to be talking about his book, Lost Lands, Forgotten Realms. Amazing stuff here. I'm about halfway through the book, so I can only really give you half preview. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to give you half and half. But it's mysterious places. It's mythical places. From what I've read so far of Lost Lands, Forgotten Realms, it is tremendous. And I'm really looking forward to talking to Dr. Bob Curran this coming week for the next episode of BOA Audio. Stop by Banal of America at some point towards the end of the week, and we'll have a little preview up of what exactly we'll be talking about with Dr. Bob Curran as we discuss Lost Lands, Forgotten Realms. And on that note, we're going to wrap it up here for the week. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening, wishing you an excellent week, and signing off.